Hi, my name is Christina Phillips. I'm one of the producers for The Exchange, and when it comes to the coronavirus pandemic, one thing I noticed right away when I was screening calls is that as people became more isolated, a lot of people were reaching out because they were desperate for resources. For example, during one of our early shows on unemployment, a woman called me and said, "I don't want to be on the air right now. I just don't know how to reach the Employment Security Office. Could you please give me their phone number? I don't have internet, and I heard your phone number on the radio, so I called you." And what is great is that in that moment, as the call screener, I was able to give her that information in real time, and I get the chance to talk to all kinds of listeners and take what I hear from them and bring that back to our team. So when we're planning shows, we can use that information to know what kind of coverage is best for you. We know it's a difficult time financially for so many people, but if you can, consider becoming a sustaining member or making a one-time gift to NHPR to help support The Exchange and this work that we're doing. You can donate by going to nhpr.org, and there you'll find all of our coronavirus coverage in one place. Again, that's nhpr.org, and thanks.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Protests continue across the U.S. over police brutality and broader systemic racism. Here in New Hampshire, a vigil last night in Manchester saw more than 700 attendees, and more activism is planned tomorrow in Portsmouth and Saturday in Nashua and Concord. But while public interest and passion are high, pulling off these events isn't easy, especially with the coronavirus pandemic. Also, footage of escalating violence at or after some demonstrations, and the question of whether protest will last in resulting change. Exchange listeners, have you attended one of these demonstrations recently in New Hampshire, or are you planning to later in the week? Tell us your experience. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. We're talking this hour with two activists, Tyrell Whitehead. He's 22 years old, a musician, a student at Plymouth State University, and a Black Lives Matter organizer in Manchester. Also with us, James McKim. He's an organizational performance consultant who today also heads the Manchester NAACP. Welcome to both of you. And James, I want to kick it right off with you. This is not the first time we have seen this story. A black man is killed by white police officers. Street protests ensue. Change is promised. And then here we are again. Does this moment feel any different to you, James?
Well, it feels similar, and it actually does feel different. I think it feels different in that there are so many people who have just had it with the situation, and the mood of the country because of the administration is also very different than it has been in the past. It's gotten to the point where people really almost want to say don't care anymore about being respectful of government, because the government's not respectful of them. So I think the environment in which this is all happening is different than it's been in the past. And people have really taken a hard look at things because of that and because of the virus. I think the COVID-19 virus, which really laid bare the disparities of how African Americans are being negatively impacted, disproportionately so, has raised consciousness that the episodes in Minneapolis just really was the straw that broke the camel's back.
And just personally, James, you know, as a black man, as someone who is, you know, in addition to working his day job, is heading the Manchester NAACP, how are you feeling at this moment? I mean, again, we've seen this movie before, and it doesn't seem to change.
I'm cautiously optimistic. The cautiously because, as you say, we've seen this before, and the people who are in power and keeping the environment the way it is and controlling the environment are still there. So I'm cautious about that. But I'm optimistic because we have youth like Terrell who are really leading the way in calling out these injustices. And we have there are people who are in power who are very much dedicated to eliminating this discrimination. And I've had conversations with many folks in government recently over the past couple of weeks, state government and federal government, which leaves me very hopeful.
Tyrell, I want to turn to you too. And you're only 22 years old, but you have seen this movie before as well. Does this moment feel different to you?
It's different and much the same. I'd say it's different because now we are officially tired. We're exhausted. We don't want to deal with this anymore. But it's the same story over and over again for us.
Well, and tell me more about the tired and how that feels and how you're experiencing this personally, Tyrell.
Well, I see that a lot of my Black friends, my Black family, we're losing hope. Like, people are losing hope and they're running out of options of what they're going to do. Racism has been a problem for 400 years. We've dealt with it.
And so you're tired. We've seen this before. Those are some of the things that you're saying. So you don't share the optimism that that James just expressed.
Oh, I do see the optimism, but I also see the exhaustion part of it.
Go ahead, Tyrell. How does that exhaustion feel?
It's really crippling, honestly.
I can imagine.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Just to deal with the same thing over and over and over again. You organized the vigil last night in Manchester, Tyrell. What stands out for you from that event?
That vigil was beautiful because we had so much support from the community. The community was there to hear us out, and they supported us throughout it all. It was beautiful.
What did that support look like, feel like, sound like?
Well, when I looked up and I saw candles all over the park, lighting up the sky, it was beautiful.
There were candles, there were speeches. Were there any problems, Tyrell? I think that's the fear that, you know,
at the vigil, there was not a single problem. Nope.
Yep. Was there anything that happened afterwards? Sometimes at these events, you know, the official vigil shuts down and then things happen after.
After the vigil, we told everybody to go home. Anything that took place after that was not connected to our movement.
According to the union leader, there was a group of protesters that congregated near Taco Bell on South Willow Street, yelling at police, setting off fireworks, throwing objects at police vehicles. That's according to the union leader. So that was not you guys. And were you aware of that?
We heard about that. Sent organizers out there to stop that. We tried to dispel that the best we could.
Yeah. How did that go for you? And what was the interaction with police around that?
Well, I heard there were altercations and people got arrested. I heard there was also anti-protesters there that were counter-protesting, and they had weapons on them.
I think we saw a little bit of that after the demonstration in Manchester on Saturday as well. There was a case of that. James, do you want to jump in? And how, you know, it's been tricky because people who are organizing these events have told me they do not want violence, but then sometimes things happen and sometimes it's people from the outside. So I'd love your thoughts too, James.
Right. You're absolutely right. You know, and Tyrell and the Black Lives Matter folks, the leaders have really done a good job along with the ACLU help to lay out to everyone that we want these protests to be peaceful. We don't want them to be violent at all. We're looking to celebrate life and to call attention to life. And So any of the violence that may have happened is from people outside with an outside agenda coming in and wreaking havoc as they want to discredit the efforts, and they want to cause mayhem and can keep the divisiveness that has been perpetrated by many people, keep that divisiveness going. This is again what we're tired of, and that the NAACP has a campaign now, a "We Are Done Dying" campaign, which is really targeted at, you know, helping people to understand not just the fact that we're tired and we don't want to take it anymore, but we also want to help people understand what they can do to fix the situation, to rectify the situation. And that means confronting people who might come into these protests and disrupting the protest against our wishes of them being peaceful.
Wow. Well, I want to invite our listeners to join us as well. I'm sure lots of people have questions, comments, concerns, and personal experiences. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. And Exchange listeners, have you attended one of these events in New Hampshire, or do you plan to? As I said earlier, there are more coming up later this week. What's been your experience? What's going to pull you to attend? Or are you watching from afar? We want your thoughts, too, as you observe what's happening around our country and here in our state. Also, how do you think the pandemic and social media are affecting what's happening in our streets today? Lots of questions for your listeners, and we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. And Pedro's calling in from Concord. And Pedro, welcome to The Exchange. Good to have you.
Thank you so much, guys. And I wanted to extend my thank you to the panel for you guys working in solidarity at a distance. I know you guys have your respective avenues where you're doing the work, so I wanted to extend that thank you on behalf of many people in the state. But I wanted to mention, I was at the last night's vigil, and it was a beautiful nonviolent demonstration. And I wanted to add that what was illustrated last night was people, multi-generational, multi-racially attended event of people who are no longer going to forfeit their history to yield to police brutality. And we understand that there has been a very damaging relationship between law enforcement and minorities of color. And I think the general consensus in the crowd is that the brutality in law enforcement has been so severe that we just want someone to police the police. But even there was an element in the crowd that was very, very strong, that it's so severe that we don't even wish that police treatment upon the police. So that calls upon for law enforcement reform. What I do wish I saw, and I hope to see as a follow-up, is that there was a lot of passion still left in the crowd after the vigil was over. And so I am an understanding that in order to kind of freeze that power and to organize that power, there needs to be some kind of legislative and political avenues for these youth to engage. It was a predominantly, it was a youth-led event, and it was a lot of youth at this event, and those folks are still left wondering what to do next. So I would encourage that any young adults or adults who know of the organizers of last night's events to get in touch with them and to organize around them and to help them create avenues for people to follow up with their passion and emotions and put in the work that is necessary to create a more equitable Granite State.
Pedro, I'm just curious, what is your experience with law enforcement here in New Hampshire?
My experience with law enforcement has been rather polite. I used to work for the city of Nashua, who has a great relationship with the minority community. The Nashua PD has done a lot of good work. Mike Carignan and Carlos Camacho, amongst many who have worked in solidarity with their communities. I am not native to New Hampshire. I've been a resident for 10 years, and most of my law enforcement encounters that have been impolite have been in New York City. I've been racially profiled. I've been detained for unlawful practices before. So my experiences have been in urban environments where that experience is a little bit more predominant. But here in New Hampshire, because the population is 95% white, people would assume that experience does not happen here, but it just moves in silence. So wow. It's very important that that kind of support for people of color is visible. I understand that people, especially up here, people are very connected to their law enforcement because it's such a local state, such a local community. But it's very important that if you are supporting those people who are in the front lines trying to protect and serve as their job is telling them to do, that you also show visibility for those people who are affected by eons of police and law enforcement brutality.
Well, and since you mentioned the chief of Nashua Police, we had Chief Kerrigan on earlier this week. So it's good to hear you say, Pedro, that you appreciate the efforts that the chief has made in Nashua. Thank you for calling, Pedro. Let's take another call. This is Samantha in Merrimack. Hi, Samantha, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure.
So I attended the vigil last night as well, and I was at the Black Lives Matter March in Manchester this past weekend. And I am, you know, part of that very small group of Black people that live in New Hampshire. I've lived here since I was 2. I'm 21 now. And I thought that the protests were very well organized. I feel as though there's definitely a lot of confusion in terms of, you know, who's at these peaceful protests and who's, you know, making a bunch of noise, you know, for no good reason. And I feel like part of our movement is to try and make sure that those differences are definitely seen. I have had a negative experience with police here in the state. I was going to thank Pedro for sharing his thoughts, and that's awesome that the Nashua Police Department is so great. But I've had an experience with the Auburn Police Department that was not. And so I feel like even though we are definitely a minority in the state, people need to realize that it's not that these stories are not new, that police brutality and unnecessary, you know, anger and violence is not new. The cameras are new. And the reason why we're at these protests and we're at these vigils and we're all on social media and we're all trying to bring attention to this is because hopefully with this new technology, with this new space that we're in the world, we can make a difference with the tools that we have. And the last thing I'll say is my grandmother was 98 when she passed away 2 years ago. She kept her brain the whole time. And she would often talk about how, you know, things weren't getting better, how she and her generation had fought so hard during civil rights, and that with the current administration and, you know, with police brutality the way that it is, there weren't a lot of changes. And I can't decide right now whether or not I'm glad that she's passed and doesn't have to see this, or that I wish she was still here so that she could see a difference being made.
And so it sounds like, Samantha, you share some of the optimism that James expressed at the beginning of the show, that this could make a difference, this movement we're seeing.
I do feel that. I do think that it could. And I'm more of an optimistic person than a pessimistic person. However, if this doesn't, you know, make a change, if all these peaceful protests don't make a change, if we don't really make a change in November, I am not sure, you know, what this country is going to look like. And that really scares me, quite honestly.
Well, Samantha, it's good to hear from you and good to hear so many voices from people who attended some of the events that we've seen in New Hampshire. Let us know if you attended a vigil or a protest in your community, in addition to the big ones in Manchester and larger ones planned in Nashua and Concord. There have been a lot of small events around New Hampshire. So let us know if you're attending or if you're watching from afar, how you're observing and thinking about this moment that we are in right now. Our phone number again is 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And James and Tyrell, one more call I'd like to take. This is Regina in Stratford. Hi, Regina. You're on the air. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, thank you. I was just calling. I was at the rally on Saturday in Manchester, and, you know, it occurred to me heading to the rally, and I've been to other things around social justice issues. You know, on social media, there was a lot of concern about white supremacists and people with guns and that type of threat. And, you know, as a white person, I thought, boy, you know, this is just a taste of what it feels like to live with the worry of police brutality. I have lived in predominantly black neighborhoods in the past where my life insurance was canceled, my car insurance was skyrocketed because of redlining. But I would say that, you know, Manchester, it was a really positive event. I counted the crowd at one point when we did the second loop around the park, and it was around 1,200 people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Towards the end, there was a black man that wasn't part of the protest that was thanking people, and he was choked up, and I wanted to give him a hug, but because of COVID, I didn't know what I should do. But I also want to say that I have an issue with the media, and you just did it, Laura, where you're asking people that have a peaceful protest to defend troublemakers and agitators. You know, the issue with South Willow Street, it wasn't even in the same location.
Sure.
And we don't say to someone whose house burned down, well, why weren't you there? Why didn't you have a garden hose? I mean, years ago when I protested at Seabrook Station, we always had agitators that showed up that either had their own issues. You know, we can't be responsible for other people and their intentions. If you weren't there as a member of the rally or as an ally or as a supporter, like people that organize that event, I don't even think it's fair to ask them to speak to it.
Sure. Regina, I'm really glad that you called. You raised so many important points, and I was in no way trying to make Tyrell responsible for anything, you know, negative that happened. I was trying to reflect the difficulty of people like Tyrell who want their events to be positive. And then, you know, other people, as James has said, come in from the outside and try to make it less positive. So I really appreciate you raising that point. And Tyrell, I want to ask you something else, too, that Regina said. It's so important. She said, you know, there was a man there. He was choked up. He was crying. She wanted to hug him and she couldn't. How has coronavirus affected your capability, Tyrell, to pull these things off?
You know, we do our social distancing. We do the best. We hand out masks at every event. And I do the elbow bumps, you know. I try not to do the handshakes and the hugs. I keep it at a minimum. It's tough.
Do you think that there are people, Tyrell, who would want to come out and support you but are afraid to come out? We've been told forever to not gather in large groups. In fact, I was looking at some of the Facebook pages of some of the different event organizers. And before you even get the information about the event, Facebook has a message that I guess it's putting everywhere that says, you know, COVID-19 in our communities, everyone, including young and healthy people, should avoid large gatherings at this time. So what do you think, Tyrell?
I think that's 100% true, because when we do our events and we look at the list of people that are interested in going, we have a lot more people interested than going. I believe coronavirus does have something to do with that.
Yeah. And James, what about Regina's point that don't blame the organizers for problems that happen, you know, either elsewhere or even at the event? There's a lot of conversation about this, James, trying to, you know, suss out what is going on.
Yeah, there is, and it is a very good point. And, you know, a lot of it has to do with the fact that people don't always know who the organizers are or what they stand for. And I think, you know, this time around, Tyrell and the team and folks have really gone above and beyond to try to identify who they are and what they're trying to accomplish and how they're trying to accomplish it being peacefully. So, and I guess in some sense, there's a little bit of trust you have to put into them that they are going to act true to their word, but understand that you can't control every single person. There are people who have agendas of their own and people who you're not going to be able to control. So the best laid plans of mice and men, as the saying goes, you can't control everybody. And there are going to be things that happen that you don't want to happen, that do not reflect what you want your endeavor to reflect. So we just need to understand that as humans and be kind to ourselves. I mean, it's a very tense time. There's a lot of stress, but we're doing this out of love. And those who are against this are not being loving. They're not showing love.
We are going to take a quick break. When we come back, I've got a lot of emails I'd like to share with both of you. Also, some more phone calls. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook, Twitter, or you can give us a call. 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we're talking with local organizers of protests aimed at police brutality and, more broadly, systemic racism. And Exchange listeners, it's been great to hear from you this morning. We want your thoughts, observations, especially if you've attended one of these events in New Hampshire or you plan to later this week. How do you think also the pandemic and social media are affecting what we're seeing around us today? Again, we really would like to hear your thoughts. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook, tweet us, or call in 1-800-892-6477. We have two guests, Tyrell Whitehead. He's a student at Plymouth State University, a musician, and a Black Lives Matter organizer in Manchester. Also with us, James McKim. He's an organizational performance consultant who today heads the Manchester NAACP. And let's go right back to our listeners, gentlemen. And Michael writes, are there specific local grievances that Tyrell wants to address, or is the vigil aimed at national issues? Michael says, what's the specific situation in New Hampshire that needs to be addressed? And he's got another part to his email, but I think that's a really good question, Michael. Thank you. And Tyrell, how would you respond to that?
First of all, it's Tyrell Whitted. But second, I'd like to say that we're tackling prejudice and not understanding your Black brothers and sisters and your neighbors right next to you down the street. And we're also calling out police brutality across the nation.
So tell us a little bit more about the experiences that you hear about in New Hampshire that kind of, you know, reflect what you just said. Yeah.
Well, growing up for me, I was always told I was too dark, this and that, or I was also told that I spoke like a white person. So like, I heard that a lot too. And we all have stories like that. So we all experience it. It's hard to not understand if you're not experiencing the racism firsthand.
Sure. So when did you start sort of getting involved in this activism, Tyrell? You're young, you're only 22, but you've been at this for a while from what I understand.
Our first protest was in 2016, after I had gotten into multiple arguments with the locals about like issues on racism. I felt like we had to have this movement because like people honestly did not understand what we were experiencing.
Try and help us understand a little bit more what you experienced, Tyrell. We get
followed in the stores. I have friends who get arrested. I've been pulled over in Bedford for walking down the street. They dropped me off at the Manchester Bedford border.
Wow. What did they say when they pulled you over for walking down the street?
They said, you're wearing dark clothes.
Wearing dark clothes.
Yes. That is a direct quote.
Wow. I wear dark clothes all the time. James, what do you think of this?
So this is endemic of just the tip of the iceberg. We are, in fact, just over the past week, our legislative redress committee chair, Attorney Donna Brown, has been pulling together a list of actions that we think are necessary to take to help change the culture around how people of color are seen here in New Hampshire and how we're dealt with by the criminal justice system of which the police force is part. And there's so many examples that need to be heard. And what's great about what the Black Lives Matter protests are doing is they're sharing these stories, as Terrell said, lifting up the experiences of people of color in New Hampshire that most people don't see because we hide it. We try to get along. We try to not burden people, at least we have in the past, with the negativism that many of us have experienced. And that's comes back to we're tired of it. We're tired of holding it in.
Yeah. Sorry to jump in there, James. Have you been, you know, pulled over either in your car for what I've heard people call, you know, the crime of driving while black? Have you been, you know, taken from Bedford to Manchester like Terrell for wearing the wrong clothes? What experiences have you had, James?
I've been relatively fortunate. I have been stopped in situations where I don't think I should have been stopped. So you could call that being stopped while black. So I've experienced it. I think not as much as others have. I've been blessed and fortunate, but I have experienced it, and I know what it feels like. And having grown up actually in Charleston, South Carolina, I experienced it when I was growing up even more so than I've experienced it here. And it does not feel good, and it causes trauma and what Dr. Joy DeGuri calls multi-generational trauma that is passed down from our parents who experienced it to us, and we react in ways that someone who has not been through that kind of trauma would react. We freeze in situations. We act out in situations where other people would say, well, why did you act out? There wasn't – what happened wasn't that bad. Well, there's a great video on microaggressions explaining what they are, and they're little digs or statements or comments about someone which may not seem hugely injurious, but if you get a lot of them, it's like little mosquito bites. If you got bitten by a lot of mosquitoes in an hour period, you'd be really irritated, wouldn't you? So that's what we're dealing with here. Intergenerationally, our parents experienced it. Our grandparents experienced that their behavior was shaped by it, and our behavior and how we react to things is shaped by it. And that's what's coming out right now.
So that mosquito bite analogy is a really good one. One mosquito bite doesn't bother you, but if you get 100 mosquito bites, you know, in the course of a week, you're really uncomfortable and you're not acting, you know, you're not acting in the way that you would if you were more comfortable.
That's right. It's exactly right. It's exactly right.
Well, Michael, go ahead. Go ahead, James.
And I also wanted to just follow up on something Pedro said, which I think is really important, if I might. There is a lot of energy that's evident from these protests, and the follow-up is so, so important. It's so, so important that with that energy, people channel that energy to join organizations, and I'll put in a plug for the NAACP here, who are working to identify discriminatory policies and procedures and put forth recommendations and push for legislative change, push for policy change. I had a great conversation just yesterday with Senator Hassan in Congress right now. They're looking at putting together a new criminal justice bill. And so we're working with her to identify and working with other partners here in the Manchester area to identify what should be part of that bill. We're taking the energy that our membership and other folks in this city have, and we want to draw upon that energy that these protests have had and move it into long-term systemic change.
And Terrell, what did you learn from that first protest experience that you told us about in 2016 and transmitting that to the long-lasting change that James and a couple of our callers have talked about?
Well, in 2016, what I learned from that is that we do have the opportunity to make a change in this world. And then in 2020, we learned that we still have work to do.
Do you feel like the 2016 was a start and got you to this moment? Or do you look back on 2016 and say, we tried so hard and nothing happened?
I look at 2016 as a moment of priming for us, for sure. We were just getting ready. We're getting started.
All right. Let's go back to our listeners. Lots of people want to talk to you guys. And Fiona's calling from Albany. Hi, Fiona. Welcome to The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi there. So I just wanted to go back to the discussion about having these protests and these vigils during the coronavirus pandemic, because I think some folks try to discredit the movement or to say that it's irresponsible. But I just want to bring back to the fore the fact that police brutality and white supremacy are part of a global health crisis that has existed for 400 years. So I'm really energized to see folks still coming out. As I think Tyrell said, it's still, you know, smaller than it might have been had there not been a pandemic going on, but I'm glad that folks are not heeding that advice to stay home just to protect themselves when Black and brown folks are being murdered, no matter what the global health situation.
And Fiona, you're calling from Albany. There's some controversy about how a Black motorist in that town was treated. Have you had some vigils or demonstrations around that, Fiona?
Yeah, so some friends and I organized a demonstration this past Sunday in Conway, and a total of about 250 people showed up, which is big for our area. And JR, who you're referring to, did come, and it was, you know, great to speak with him and hear his experience, because as we've been hearing and as we've been talking about, this is not, we're not isolated from this in New Hampshire. This happens everywhere. And I think it's especially crucial that we as white people in New Hampshire educate ourselves, hold ourselves accountable, hold our friends and family accountable, and don't let this momentum die down just when it dies down on social media.
Well, Fiona, thank you very much for calling in. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Couple more emails, people just relating their experiences at different vigils around the state. Karen says, I attended vigils in Hanover on Saturday and New London last evening. I estimated 300 people in Hanover and counted 200 in New London. The New London vigil, where I live, was organized by youth of St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in that community. It was simple, focused on 9 tolls of the church bell, 9 minutes of silence, 9 final tolls of the bell, in memory of George Floyd, recognizing the nearly 9 minutes his throat was under the knee of the police officer, and in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement and with all who face racism in our country. Karen says, at both rallies, attendees were quiet, respectful, masked, and keeping appropriate distance from each other. Karen, thank you for that. Beth says, I'm trying to learn as much about this topic as I can so I can be a true ally. Please keep talking about this topic. Beth says, thank you. Beth, thank you for writing in. And we will keep talking about it after a very short station break. So we'll keep taking your emails at that time, exchange@nhpr.org. And again, our phone number, 1-800-892-6477.
Mm-hmm. News about the coronavirus changes daily, and every day NHPR brings you reliable reporting about what's happening in your community and across the state. Access to this essential coverage is thanks to the ongoing support of our sustaining members. Join them today by setting up a monthly contribution of just $8 or $13 a month. Support NHPR for yourself and for the benefit of the thousands of listeners who rely on this vital community resource at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, New Hampshire activists and organizers of protests aimed at police brutality and systemic racism talk about their hopes and fears going forward. Let's hear from you, listeners. Have you attended a recent demonstration, or do you plan to? There are several coming up later in the week. Tell us what your experience has been like, or tell us your thoughts if you were watching all this from afar. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can comment on Facebook, you can tweet us, or you can call in 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. You can use Facebook and Twitter as well. Our guests are Terrell Whitehead. He's 22 years old, a musician, a student at Plymouth State, and a Black Lives Matter organizer. Also with us, James McKim. He heads the Manchester NAACP. He's also a consultant with his own company. And joining us now on the phone is Ranelle Shella. Ranelle is also a Black Lives Matter organizer. And Ranelle, thank you for being with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. I did wake up a little bit late, but I wanted to make sure that I came on here today.
I appreciate it. And it was a late night, I'm sure. So both our other guests gave us their impressions of the vigil last night in Manchester. What are your impressions?
I feel really good about it. You know, it was really great to see the community come together and really try to learn how to become an ally, really mourn the lives lost by police brutality. I think I think last night really started a conversation, and I hope that that conversation resonates and extends far past this week or when the protests or headlines die down.
Well, could you talk a little bit more about that, Ranelle, please? Because that's been a theme that's come up with callers and our guests. You know, we're in this moment for sure. How does it lead to the change that you'd like to see?
Yeah, so I talked about this a little bit last night. You know, I think the first thing we need to do is have conversations with each other. A lot of us are staying silent when we see people next to us, people that we know and love, being silent. You know, you can't say Black Lives Matter and say that you care, but not tell your friends and your neighbors and your parents and your kids about the cause as well. You can't let them be ignorant. I think that's the first thing. Another thing is we need to make sure that we are going to our elected officials, we are voting, and we are making sure that they are hearing our voice, because this is really where we can see long-lasting change.
What kind of support have you heard or felt from the state's top leadership? For example, James mentioned earlier he talked with Senator Hassan. What are you hearing from, you know, anybody from the governor to members of Congress to your local leaders to, you know, your chiefs of police?
Yeah, so we've gotten a lot of support, a lot of support from the Manchester Police Department. Governor Chris Sununu called us before the rally on Saturday. Yesterday, Congressman Chris Pappas personally called me. That was great. Office of Senator Jeanne Shaheen, local leaders like Mary Joyce Craig, and so many more people have been in support, and it's really great to know that they're behind us. But I think it's important that they just don't say it, but that they're there to listen to us when we come forward with our requests.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Congressman Pappas. He's going to be on the show tomorrow, so that's convenient. Oh, wow. For me, Ranelle, thank you. What is your message to the congressman?
My message to them is that I said this a lot to people last night. They are there to work for us. You know, they can say that they are here for us and they support us, but at the end of the day, if they refuse to make change, we will vote them out. That's my message.
And change, what kind of change specifically? I can guess, because we've talked a lot about it already this hour, but what kind of change, Ranelle, do you want to see?
Yeah, so there's a lot of, I think, tension in New Hampshire. Our racial relations here aren't, you know, the best that they could be. They're also not terrible. But I think there's the Manchester Police Department, a lot of police departments in New Hampshire could benefit from more racial sensitivity training. There's a long list of things that we can do here. In the coming days, I think you can look for a long list of demands and things that we will coordinate with NAACP to make sure that we are united and putting out one cohesive message, because I think it's important to be united in this and come as one voice.
What's it been like for you to be standing at these events with, we've heard descriptions of a lot of young people, we've heard descriptions from other guests and callers about, multiracial crowds. What does it look like to you to be at these events, Rennell, and what does it feel like?
You know, it's like you said, people come of all races, all ages, all shapes and sizes, and that's really great because, like I said, unity is very important, and it's nice to see people come together like that. For me, it's been a lot of things. It's been scary. It's been fun. It's been exciting. You know, it's nice to get fired up and get in front of a crowd like that. It's been emotional. Last night, I broke down a couple of times, you know. But I think it's important for people like me, Terrell, Erica, and Elijah Kendrick to remain on the front lines of things like this.
What kind of language, Rennell, have you heard to describe different protests, whether they take place in New Hampshire or around the country? I'm sure you're keeping an eye on the national picture. Because there's been some discussion around some of the language, you know. Was it peaceful? Was it angry? Was it a riot? You know, people have used these words.
Yeah, and, you know, we here have remained peaceful, completely peaceful. You know, there are people that are going to disagree with our cause regardless. They don't really care how we protest. And I think, you know, that just goes to show that they're against our cause itself and not the method that we choose in which to relay our grievances. You know, we can march peacefully and people will call us thugs. They'll call us rioters. They'll call us all of these things, but at the end of the day, we're not going to back down because it's something that we truly believe in and we're going to stand up for.
I want to bring in our other guests, too. And James, to hear from you, you're from a different generation than Terrell. And I wonder what you are learning from the young people who are out there, given, you know, your background, you protested in the 1960s and so forth.
Well, what I'm learning is that each generation, and if you study protest over history, you learn that each generation brings to it, to the fight, a new perspective, a different perspective. And I've learned that about this set of protests in this generation. They're bringing a different perspective to this fight. They get it so much more deeply than I think in the past people who were on the sidelines before, they didn't get it. And so young folks these days, from what I see, they get it and they want to be active. They want to be much more active than I think previous generations. So I think that activism is something that I've learned about, and just the passion that they bring is really inspiring. And I've learned too, and this is something that those of us who are getting a little older have to grapple with as we get older. We're not as ready to take risks as the younger folks are. And it's a good thing, and this harkens back to the discussion we had about the pandemic being around. And there's a risk in being out there in numbers, and these young folks are showing us the way in that there's more risk in not being out there and being active than not being out there. So that's something I've learned from this group too.
Wow. And so sort of flipping the question for you, Terrell, what have you learned from you know, I don't want to say older activists, James, but activists who've been in this for a long time. Go ahead, Terrell.
We've learned everything. We've learned that it's a long fight for sure, but we've learned how to move. We've learned from our elders. We take from example. We lead by example, and we take from example.
What kind of example have you gotten, Terrell?
Well, we listen to people like James, elders in our community. We look at activists like Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X even. We take notes from them and we try to do our best to make change based off of that.
Do you have differences with, you know, earlier generations from the civil rights movement, Terrell? Or do you sometimes hear advice and you think, no, I'm sorry, that doesn't work for me?
We're all fighting the same fight.
So the advice is appreciated and taken in, it sounds like.
Appreciated, noted, yes.
Yeah. Renell, what do you think about this? There's been a lot about the generational, you know, differences.
Yeah, I agree. I think that we definitely do take notes from older generations because they were doing this long before. They really paved the way for us. We couldn't have been standing before Manchester last night if it wasn't for them. From Harriet Tubman to Rosa Parks and Dr. King, these are all people who we get our strength from. You know, last night on a video call, we were all just so, you know, so nervous about what was to come last night. And we just kept reminding each other that these people who came before us had courage and they had strength. And we just kept reminding ourselves what we set out to do. And like Terrell said, we're all fighting the same fight.
I want to take one more call. This is Shantae in Manchester. Hi, Shantae. You're on the air. Welcome. Go ahead.
Hey, Mom.
Hi. I just wanted to say.
You're Terrell's mom.
Yes, I am. I just wanted to say that I'm extremely proud of you, all of you. You guys are so brave, and you're fighting the good fight, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Shantae, were you at the vigil last night, or were you at the event on Saturday in Manchester?
Both.
Both. And how did that feel to you?
On Saturday, it was surreal. Saturday was definitely surreal. The amount of people there, the amount of support, the amount of love, it was surreal. It was amazing. It was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And then last night was just very emotional. It was very emotional. It was very touching. And it just kind of put you in a different mindset where you just thought of people that came before you.
You know, this is a really important point, Shantae. I'm really glad you raised it because we focused a lot this hour on, you know, the demonstrations and you know, do they make a difference and do people in power listen? But you're hitting on something else, Shantae, that it's just important for people to be together and feel the love, so to speak.
Absolutely.
It's about more than just, you know, sending a message to whoever might be in power. I'm really glad you called, Shantae, and it's nice of you to give your son a pat on the back on the air. Thanks for calling. James, I can hear you wanting to jump in.
Yeah, this is so important. The reasons why these gatherings happen are so important to understand. It's not just that they're demands that are being articulated, but this is a grieving process. People are gathering because we're grieving these deaths of our brothers and sisters and fathers. And this is our way to release some of that grief, to console ourselves, to heal ourselves, while at the same time leveraging that sharing to let people know what it is we're going through and what it is we've been going through. And yes, there are going to be demands coming out of that, but we need this gathering to heal and to make ourselves strong enough to keep going with this fight.
By the way, just a quick organizational point, James, we had a caller who wanted to reach the Manchester NAACP and wasn't able to. So what's the best way to do that?
Our phone number, I'm not sure how that person tried to reach us, but the phone number is 603-214-7044. And you can also reach us at unit2069@gmail.com. So either those places, either ways should get to us.
All right. We'll put links to that on our website and our website, nhpr.org/exchange. Last questions for all of you. And Winnell, maybe you first. What's giving you hope over the last few days?
I think really seeing people who didn't get it before wake up. There are a lot of people who have come to us and have said, you know, I didn't know before, but now I do, and I'm ready to stand with you. And that, to me, is the utmost form of hope.
Well, Renelle, thank you for being with us. It's good to talk to you this morning. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
That's Renelle Chella. She's a Black Lives Matter organizer. How about you, Terrell? Same question. What's making you feel hopeful, if anything?
What gives me hope the most is the fact that people are actually changing their minds and they are actually giving us an opportunity to be heard. And for anybody that would like to discuss this or would like to just have a conversation with a Black person, you guys can all talk to me on Twitter at @RallyTheProfit or Instagram at @RallyTheProfit. Or you can message me on Facebook, Terrell Witted, and I will be glad to help clarify any issues.
All right. And we'll put links to those on our website as well, just in case people are driving down the road and didn't catch everything you said. Thank you, Terrell, very much. It's good to talk to you.
Thank you.
Terrell is a student at Plymouth State University and a Black Lives Matter organizer and a musician. And last question for you too, James. You hinted at it, but what's making you feel good these days?
What's making me feel good is that there's conversation going on. People are asking questions about how we feel and how we are reacting. And we have mostly peaceful protests here in New Hampshire. And that to me is hopeful that's happening and the conversations are happening more than they have in the past.
Well, it's good to talk to you too, James. We'll talk again.
Great. Thank you.
That's James McKim. He's the head of the Manchester NAACP. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our executive producer is Michael Brindley. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our fellow is Jane Vaughn. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. Thanks for being with us. I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.